We just want to do a disclaimer before we start the episode. Things discussed here can be graphic, traumatic, or potentially triggering to individuals. So keep in mind who is listening and be mindful of how it will affect them. This is Life on Duty, a podcast giving firsthand accounts from the first responders regarding scenarios that have affected them emotionally or mentally and how they've dealt with it. Hey guys, this is another episode of Life on Duty. Dobby here with Oz, and we're here with Josh. Josh, if you don't mind, will you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, obviously, my name's Josh. I've been a fireman for 17-ish years. I think I'm just coming up on 17 years. Combination of volunteer, a little bit of volunteer. I've done it long enough now that the time that I've worked full-time is definitely outweighing the short time that I was a volunteer. Worked a little bit in EMS. I actually got my start in public safety full-time as a 911 dispatcher, which was not an awesome job. My heart goes out to people that work communications because that's a terrible job. Yes. It's a terrible job.
I would agree.
Yeah. So, that's a little bit on my start. Family man, wife, two stepkids. I love family. Family's important. I think that's what kind of helps with the balance of everything in life and working in public safety and the struggles that come with it. I think that really kind of helps it out sometimes, except for whenever the kids are being little a-holes and they're just running around screaming, being terrible. You know, that can kind of suck. When you come off a shift, wound up.
Yeah,
there's nothing worse than coming off on a Friday or on a Saturday morning and kids are all like running around screaming, being crazy.
Mom's they're up waiting for you when you walk through the door.
Yep. They're just ready to go. They're ready to start a fight. You know, it's like I love those kids to death, man. But it's like sometimes it's just like we're just gonna throw hands. Like we're just gonna start off by we're just gonna fight like as soon as we go. Just get it out of the way. Yeah. All in good fun. Yeah, that's
And you collect a attic full of antique fire stuff, is that what you're saying?
I do, yes. I'm a nerd whenever it comes to fire stuff. I grew up in the fire service. My dad was a volunteer. I have a grandpa that was a volunteer firefighter. One of my cousins actually works for a fire department kind of close to us. And then his son is a wildland firefighter. So third generation. I've just been around it and I've always loved it. We have a lot of guys now that they decide they want to be firemen. Just kind of like as an adult, they're like, oh, I'm going to go to school to be a fireman. And they do that. But I was that kid that never wanted to do anything else.
Right.
And then here I am, you know,
you like
17 years later, I'm doing it and still love it. But whole attic full of nonsense. I got like 20 something old fire helmets, fire extinguishers and stuff. Whenever I was a single guy, I had all that stuff out in my apartment.
Yeah.
Like I had, I think in front of my windows, 5 big fire extinguishers, like in front of like the front windows in my living room. And, fire helmets everywhere, pictures, like all that stuff. You know, it was not the typical bachelor pad. Like you walk in at first and it's like, oh, well, there's like stuff on the walls, but it's all fire stuff.
Right.
Like that's all there was.
Well, first, we'd like to thank you just for coming out and sharing your story with us. And I'm going to let you just take over. Tell us the story the way you would like to tell the story.
Yeah, absolutely. So the story that I want to tell, it's from quite a while back. I would say that this is the hardest call that I've had, and you'll see why as I get into it. I was working a shift, department where I work at now, and it was a great place to work. Loved the guys there. The call volume was kind of low, so it's kind of a boring place to work sometimes. But the call quality was usually pretty good. We covered a large stretch of interstate, so we ran car accidents. We had a lot of car accidents, and they were usually like whenever you know, like people in public safety talk about like something that's good is always bad. You know, like go to a good fire,
right.
It wasn't like a fire in a trash can. Like you had a couple of rooms ripping. You go to a good car accident, it wasn't a fender bender. It's one where you're cutting up cars.
Right.
So we had good car accidents. It was so that I always enjoyed that. So I like the technical end of the fire service. I like all the technical specialty stuff. So we get hit out on a car accident one afternoon on the interstate. We had the stretch of highway that was completely straight and level. And we had bad car accidents there, like in that stretch all the time. And I think that what it comes from is when people come to a straightaway on the highway, they stop paying attention.
Right.
Is the only thing I could chalk that up to, because we'd always have bad car accidents through there. It doesn't make any sense. So we hit out, we had a dual response with another fire department. So this was a confirmed entrapment vehicle accident. So we pulled like two other rescue pumpers, had like three ambulances on it with a supervisor, you know. So one of the ambulances beats us there because they're a little bit closer than we are. I come off the truck, off the back. I'm riding the back step. So my job is to cut them out of the car, basically, when you're in the back of the truck.
Can you tell us what the back step is?
The back step. So yeah, the back step is, that's a term that's really old in the fire service. So a long time ago, before you had fire trucks like we have now, guys would ride on the tailboard of the fire truck. So it's back step. So we still call riding in the back of the truck as the back step. So back, that's the back step position. Using the same terms, just right. Not really the same thing. So yeah. So I'm in the back. We pull up there, and I'm met by one of the guys on the ambulance that's like, he's an old guy. He's squared away, great medic. And I can tell he's kind of frantic. And I notice he's yelling, like, we need vehicle stabilization. We need stabilization, stabilization. It's like, okay, well, I have to look at it first. Like, I had to look at the car. And it's like down this freaking embankment in the trees. You can barely see it from the road. So I'm like getting some stuff and I go down there to look at the car. And as I'm on my way down the hill, I notice there's an occupant from the car sitting on the side of the road. And she is covered in blood, like head to toe, covered in blood. Get down to where the car's at, and the embankment, it's enough of a grade that we could have classified that as a low angle rescue. Like we should have used some rope stuff, definitely to bring them up back up the hill. Getting down was not terrible, but it wasn't exactly the easiest. So I get down there, and this car is pretty much like it's on its top because of the grade, and it's leaning against a tree, so it's secure. It's not going anywhere. It's a pretty decent sized tree, and this car is freaking mangled, like just beat up. Has a probably like a 2-foot intrusion on the passenger side door. It's a little 2-door car, like a Cavalier, where they had broadsided a tree. And then there are these two girls inside the car. One of them is just messed up. She had a open skull fracture.
Oh, wow.
She was I think she was originally the front passenger in the car. She was unrestrained. The roof of the car was buckled, so every ounce that she had bled out was inside the ceiling of this car, like just like in a puddle. So she had a pulse. We got her out pretty quick. We took her out through a back window, and she's just like covered in everything. She had, I think that her eye was missing. She had a lot of facial trauma, the left side of her face. It was pretty obvious they had hit a tree, but they had hit the tree at like 90 miles an hour, broadside off the side of the highway. She's like mangled up.
What was the normal speed in that area?
It's I think the speed limit there is 70, and they were well over 90, I think. So we get her out. We flew her and the girl that was sitting by the side of the road. I never even looked at her. Somebody from one of the other ambulances was there talking to her.
Walking wounded, moving on.
Yeah, keep her out of the way. Kind of one of those things. Like, you know, on the fire truck, our job is to get people out of their bad situation. Mm-hmm. She's already out on the side of the road. We're not worried about her. You know, there's one ambulance there. There's one right behind us. There's another one coming. So she's not really our focus at all on the fire truck. So we get this chick out that's mangled up real bad. And we get her up to the road, get a helicopter. They fly her. They fly this other girl. I think based off of the mechanism of injury is why they flew the other girl. I really don't think that she had anything that was real obvious.
The other occupant or the girl on the side of the road? Okay.
So the one on the side of the road.
Okay.
So we came down to the driver. The driver's in a weird spot. She was unrestrained, but she was, whenever the car had rolled over, she had stayed in the driver position. Like she didn't get thrown from the car or anything like that. You know, like we're standing there, EMS runs a strip on her. She's still inside the car. Yeah, she's gone. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not doing anything other than getting her body out at that point. So kind of like talking, figuring out what we're going to do. Highway patrol's there. They're wanting to take pictures. She's dead in the car. They want to take pictures of where she's at in the car. Whole accident reconstruction.
Right.
So we're kind of like hanging around and we're waiting. And then they finally let us get this other girl out of this car, figure out how we're going to get this car out of here. At the time, I'm a little bit heavier than I was back then.
Okay.
I was a pretty skinny guy back in the day. And I volunteered myself. I always typically try to, especially whenever I started out, like I wanted to be the guy to do the worst part. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, nobody could ever say that you weren't doing your job if you're always the guy that volunteers to do like the nastiest part of the job. So I'll get in there. Like I'll get into the car and get her out. Crawling through the back window. Like I said, the ceiling's buckled. There's brain matter and stuff in the car. Like it was just a mess. we get her kind of positioned to where we can get her out, get a backboard in, and we slide this girl out. And at one point, like, I'm face to face with this girl inside of this car, and it's hot. You know, it's in the summertime. It's hot outside. Get her out, trying to figure out, like, okay, like, well, now I get her up to the road, find a phone. Phone's ringing like crazy. At one point, we're standing there, and one of these girls' phones is going off. We have the other two girls who've flown out, and then we're there with this girl that's deceased. And we have this phone that keeps ringing and ringing and ringing. And we're standing there with one of these state troopers, and he's like, I don't know if I should answer this.
Right.
Because it has, like, one of the... It didn't say mom on the phone. It just had some, like, some BS kind of thing on there. So we're not really 100% sure who it is that's calling. So it's like, do we really want to answer this? And it's a good thing, too, because it actually ended up being the mom. But mom heard about the car accident, heard that there was a car accident, and just, oh, well, kids haven't showed up yet. So she starts calling, freaking out because they're not answering, you know. I guess that mom intuition, something's wrong. So we're kind of hanging around there. And the guy that was driving, like, he has a clipboard, and he reads, like, we're looking at it. We're looking at the clipboard, looking at the names. And my boss on the truck is like, oh, I know somebody by this last name. So the girl that we had taken out of the car with all the facial trauma the girls that we flew. It was somebody that he was friends with. It was their daughter.
Okay.
So then we're standing there looking at it. I end up knowing the driver. Didn't even recognize her in the moment. Just caught up in all the nonsense. Didn't even recognize this girl. Like, just like, oh, yeah, we're just going to get her out. You know, like, I'm inside this car, like, face to face with this girl. And it's like my brain just totally is like not even going to associate that I actually know who this person is. You know, we're just getting her out. So I actually read her name off the clipboard. And it's like, fuck, I think I know who that person is.
Yes.
Like, date of birth and everything. It's like, I know who this is.
A little delayed, like, when you were looking at it.
Yep. So we go back, you know, we're waiting for the medical examiner to get there, take the body. So we go over and I like uncover, and it's like, sure enough, this is a guy that I was friends with all through high school. It's his cousin. I've met this kid several times. Then it's just like one of those things. It's like, oh my gosh, this is, it's crazy. I thought working somewhere where I didn't know anybody, I would never have a situation like that, you know, not from that area and everything. So me and this guy are supposed to hang out the next day. And then I'm there with his dead cousin on the side of the highway. We had plans to actually do something whenever I got off work the next shift. It's like I'm standing there, and then it's like I start to feel kind of conflicted. Should I say something to him? I don't really think it's my place.
Right.
But, you know, he's a pretty down-to-earth guy. And I had this thought of maybe I should give him a heads up. And I decided not to because I didn't know how to say, hey, man, I just ran a car accident. Your cousin's dead. You know,
right.
One of those things. So I waited. I decided not to say anything. We go back, the cleanup from this car accident, you know, being inside this car because all the blood and everything inside, it was horrible. I had to, I had to take all my gear off there at the car accident. I had to put my stuff in the truck because it was just, like, covered.
Yeah.
I had blood in my hair, on my skin, like, just all over the place. It was a freaking mess. So we get back to the firehouse. We start cleaning things up. I get in the shower. I had some, like, skin chunk in my hair.
Oh,
like,
no.
That was probably... Stand in the shower, and it's like you're shampooing your head, and you find something like that's just disgusting, you know?
Very movie scene-esque. To build the drama or to drive it home.
It was just really, it was all of these things all at once. And in the moment, I was like, I wasn't really bothered by it. Whenever the knowing the kid was one thing, like, that's tough, period. You know, like, there's a car full of, like, teenage girls. Mm-hmm. Like, that's hard. But it was the later on, after the fact, that the guy that I was going to hang out with, her cousin, he figured it out. They figured out where the car accident was at. He knew where I worked.
Right.
And so the next morning, anyway, he texts me. It's like, hey, man, my cousin died in a car accident. Like, I'm not going to be able to hang out today. So I'm going to go over to my aunt's house, kind of help them out. So I'm like, yeah, cool, whatever. Like, no big deal. Take care of your family stuff, you know.
Mm.
So... it was probably a week after that, whenever he put it all together.
You were there, possibly. Yeah. How old are you at this time?
I would have been upper 20s, probably.
Okay.
Like late 20s, maybe.
And how long were you on the job before this?
At this point, I had been there probably like 6-7 years.
So he finds out and he puts it together.
He figures this out on his own. He's a smart guy. Figures out that... this is where the accident happened. You know, they get the accident report. This is where it happened at. Like, he figures it out. It's like, hey, you want to hang out? Like, yeah, sure. And he confronts me about it. Not like in an angry kind of way. Mm-hmm. It's just like, did you work that accident? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you knew it was my cousin? Uh-huh. It's like, why didn't you say anything? I didn't know how.
Right.
You know, I wanted to. I didn't know how to do that, though. I don't know how to tell you that. So I just made a decision not to.
Yeah, it's something that's like kind of taught on the job too. It's not something that you're like equipped with before you enter the job.
You know, I don't think it's that bad to tell somebody, just people that I don't know. Mm-hmm. We had one not that long ago. One of the guys actually, he told me that I, like jokingly said that I was like cold-hearted about how I say things to people. Mm-hmm. I told a lady that her father had died and that we weren't going to do anything for him because he'd been dead for too long. Basically one of those things. We were waiting for an ambulance to come. You know, he had lividity.
Right.
Like he'd been dead for a while. You know, like we're not doing anything for that. That was, I don't think that that's that bad. I don't really struggle with doing those too much. It's one of those that's like, yeah, it's not really an awesome conversation to have. But once we get the truck, I don't really give it a second thought a whole lot.
Yes.
After that. But you know, like this one's different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is pretty close to home here. So we have a real conversation about it. And this guy, he has siblings that I was close to. So it was like, then I'm having this conversation with them. He has a younger sister. Her and this girl are a little bit closer in age. So they were a lot closer. So, like I talked to her and did they do anything to try to save her life? And, you know, it's like trying to have that like real world conversation. It's like, you know, sometimes we go to things and there just isn't anything we can do for somebody.
Right.
Like this is one of those times. There wasn't anything that we could do for her. And it's crazy because it's like, I know that PTSD is a thing. Like I know that that's a thing. I know guys on the job that struggle with stuff.
Right.
I never had anything that really, really bothered me until this.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a delayed effect. I mean, it really was.
How delayed?
Like over a month before I really started where it's like I couldn't stop thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
We get on the truck to go someplace. We drive up the highway and we drive right by it. And then we drive back down the highway. We drive right by it. You know, I was dating a lot at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I was dating people that were close to where I worked at. So then it was like I was driving by there, like on my days off, up and down the highway, drive by it all the time. Always in my mind. I couldn't get it out. Could not get it out of my head.
I guess there was there was no way for you to avoid it.
Nope. It was always right there. So we started, we actually ran three more car accidents right there in that same area. And that was every time it was like, it's going to be the same thing. And it never was. Like,
right.
They were never nearly as bad as what that accident was for our guys anyway, going there. But it was a constant. And then it got to a point, and I've never said this, like I couldn't even hang out with that guy that I was friends with.
Oh, yes. I ruined that relationship.
Like, so we're good now, but for quite a while, like I could not hang out with him because it would either come up in conversation somehow, or it was just the thought of it's like I would be so stressed out about having this conversation because it was always the same thing. We're talking about it over and over and over again,
right?
And I was tired of it.
Is it because he's like he's working through the situation at the same
and
time?
Like, yeah, he's struggling. He's going through his own stuff. The same with his sisters, everything like that.
You had to repeat this conversation like multiple times with like quite a few of them, it sounds like.
Yeah, it was terrible. So I stopped hanging out with him, stopped kind of talking to his sister for a while and stuff, just because I had to get away from it. But I felt like no matter what I tried to do, there's no getting away from it.
Yes.
And that was probably that incident is the one that has probably affected me the most negatively. I didn't go to the funeral. I didn't think that that would have been healthy at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that because I didn't, you know, like I knew who this kid was, but I wasn't like, if I'd have ran into her someplace prior to this incident and she wasn't with one of her cousins that I knew, I probably wouldn't have talked to her.
Right.
You know, one of those things. So I didn't want to go to the funeral. And then I think that now looking back that maybe I should have, I think that maybe it wasn't a good thing for the last thing that I saw of this kid as being covered up in a sheet on the side of the highway and knowing who she was. So that was, I think, probably not the best thing And I know that it wouldn't have been a big deal for me to go to the funeral.
Right.
But that was, it was like, yeah, it was like months later, like a month later is whenever it started to get really, really rough.
Yeah. Like how did it start to get rough?
I couldn't stop thinking about it. Mm-hmm. You know, like I was saying, like you go up and down the highway, we were running other car accidents out in that area and stuff. It was just like, it's on my mind all the time. Like there was no point where I had just, you know, like we're sitting around and you're like, thinking about anything. That's what I thought about.
Right.
Was that car accident and just the image of her and then this other girl that was really messed up, just like in this car. It was just always there.
You're thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Did you happen to have dreams, nightmares, anything like that?
Yep. Yeah, I would have, I started having night terrors.
Oh.
Shortly after that.
What does that look like exactly?
So for me, you know, I didn't understand what it was at the time. Mm-hmm. It had been going on for a while before I'd really put it together. I hadn't been sleeping well, and I've never really slept really awesome. But it was worse. And then I was having, like, I would have like flashback kind of, it was like bits and pieces of that day that I would remember, like, while I was, like, it would just pop up while
snapshots.
I was asleep. Oh, yeah, snapshots. And then I would have moments, I guess it was like sleep paralysis is what I was.
Oh, okay.
So I would be like awake, couldn't freaking move at all, just feeling like I'm in danger.
Yes.
And couldn't escape it, and just horrible anxiety. I would see shit that I couldn't even explain.
Mm-hmm. Like
monsters, kind of, you know, like it was just scary shit.
That's associated with sleep paralysis pretty regularly. Yeah. Like shadow beings or something like that.
Yeah. I didn't understand what it was at the time. And then I kind of made the connection, like, I can't stop thinking about this. I'm seeing it while I'm asleep. Like I'm having these little flashbacks.
Right.
Like you said, it's like snapshots of these kids. All screwed up, and then that on top of it, it's like something is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like something is not right. And then at the time, it's like, you know, I worked with guys that it's like, oh, you just don't talk about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's the culture. That's what I was going to ask next, is what the culture's like.
Yeah, the culture was definitely not a open, like, hey, let's talk about our feelings, what's bothering us kind of a thing. And I have nothing bad to say about those guys. Like,
right.
I don't. I love those guys to death. The guy that I worked for at the time, he was like your stereotypical, like, kind of, jock type A personality kind of a guy. He was that guy. If you were doing something, if you were goofing off at the firehouse, he'd yell, you fucking gay. Like, shit like that. That was his normal. Like, I don't know how many times he said that to me and the guy that I worked with. One time it was it's cause something we said on the radio.
Right.
Like, we joke around on the radio with dispatch because we knew some guys from up there, and we pull in the firehouse, and as soon as we walk the firehouse, he yells from the office, like, you like being fucking gay on the radio? It's like, kinda. Yeah, actually. As a matter of fact, I do. So it wasn't really, we didn't have that atmosphere of let's talk about our shit that's bothering us.
Right.
So I started to, you know, all of this stuff built up to where I didn't even want to go to work. It wasn't that I disliked being a fireman, because I was a volunteer at the time also. I volunteered where I lived at.
Oh, okay.
No issues there. I don't run calls there. Not a problem.
No reminders or anything. Yep.
Go to work as soon as I pulled in the parking lot. It was like it's there.
Wow.
Working through that, like I've always been, I was really involved in church whenever I was young, like high school.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of fell away from it as I started working full time and everything. And I started going back to church a little bit. And that didn't even really help because I didn't know how to talk to anybody about it.
Right.
You know, other than like, yeah, I went to this really bad car accident. It was messed up.
Right.
Like, I didn't know how to work through that. So I didn't. I just didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it took probably, it was probably well over a year from the time of the accident to where I didn't have an issue with, I wasn't thinking about it anymore. I wasn't having the issues anymore. It was probably right around a year. One year for like a couple hours worth of.
Did you feel like you had any other signs and symptoms manifest besides the night terrors and the sleep paralysis and the snapshots or flashbacks or thinking about it all the time?
I was probably pretty irritable along with all of that. I never had anybody come out and say anything to me. You know, it's really hard to like self-reflect and look at what's wrong with you.
Absolutely.
You know? But I never had anybody really like come out and be like, dude, what is your fucking problem?
Right.
Like, what's wrong with you? Like, that never happened.
You know? And then, what about your relationship?
At the time, you know, I was just kind of like, I was like sometimes 3+ dates a week. I didn't have anything that was real steady.
Oh, okay.
That wasn't really, it wasn't affecting anything as far as that. I think my parents knew. I think they could tell something was up. I spent a lot of time with my parents at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Dad being in public safety, like, he knows what the deal is. But even he, like, there was no let's talk about it with him either. So we didn't really talk about it a whole lot. And then I try not to, like, I don't talk to my mom about stuff. Cause, you know, she's your typical sweet little old mom. Mm-hmm. Like, she doesn't really get it a whole lot.
Right.
So that was really difficult. And then eventually, you know, over time, like the relationships got better.
Okay.
Like between me and this, like her cousin, the guy that I was friends with, is like that all got a little bit better because they stopped talking about it.
Yes.
But then it was one of those, like, on the anniversary of the car accident. They'd have this get together, and then it's like I don't want anything to do with that.
Like a month, like a little, like a whole, yeah, like a whole month there. Like, you know, it's coming, so you gotta like kind of step away.
So I just would not have anything to do with them.
What at the year point? You said it was about a year.
Mm-hmm.
What shifted, or what helped, or like what made that change?
I don't have an answer for why. I guess it's just like. Yeah, have you ever heard the saying, like, time heals all wounds?
Okay.
I think it was just the time. Mm-hmm. Like, I was around that year point where, like, I wasn't thinking about it. I hadn't been having, like, dreams or anything like that at that point for a while. It's just getting easier. I don't even know how to explain it. It's like I'm just coping with it a lot easier, you know? It's just fading away. Then, you know, some of the hard parts that came along with that, was, you know, like I was saying, like, they'd have this thing, like, every year on this girls, like, they have this thing. They built a shrine on the side of the highway. And not like your typical, like your little cross. They built a freaking shrine. It had like solar powered lights and stuff out there, all kinds of stuff. They'd take flowers out there all the time. It turned into such an issue that MoDOT told them that they had to take it down. Because we were going to car accidents there. Because of all the solar powered lights, people
got
his car off the roadway. Like, we were going back there to the site, the actual site of the accident, because of the shrine that they had built. Like, that was really dicked up. Like, it was horrible. Because we knew that we were either going to some other BS accident right in there, or we're going to the shrine. It's like we called it the shrine.
Yeah.
So,
which doesn't help anything.
No. For them, it's like it's their way of coping with it.
Right.
But, and I don't think that they should really give us a whole lot of thought either, you know? Like, they lost a family member.
Right.
Like, it's just another day at work, is what people think for us.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, no, we're going there all the time. So actually, I told them, I was like, hey, this isn't good for any of us. It's hard on the crew.
Oh, like, your friend?
Like, yeah, I told my friend that and his sister that I was close with. I was like, hey, like, we're going here all the time. They actually sent me a screenshot with the letter that they got from MoDOT. Oh, this is bullshit. I was like, maybe we should talk. Like, let's talk about this.
How'd it go?
They were very receptive.
Oh.
I think they were upset that MoDOT was kind of on them over, like, hey, it needs to be a cross. Like, there's actually, I guess that they actually have a thing.
Criteria.
There's a criteria for it, for the easement or whatever, which I didn't even know about.
Yeah.
So they told them they needed to follow that, which they were upset about. I don't blame them. There was a coping thing for them, is building this thing.
How long after the accident was the shrine removal conversation?
So they started building that up immediately after the accident.
Right.
And then we were going there fairly regularly after the fact. I don't remember exactly how long it was. I would say that was probably within that, like, that first 6 months, somewhere in there.
That it got taken down?
Yeah, that they were like, hey, you need to do something with this. So it was kind of a contributing thing to that, the issues that I was having, because we're there, going there, we're driving by it, like, there's no escape from it.
Right.
You know, the conversation that we had, it was pretty good. I was like, you know, like, this isn't easy on the guys that I work with either, because my boss, I knew one of these kids also, you know, he has a little bit more distance from it. Knew the parents, I guess, not really knew the kid.
but it's like, this isn't easy on us. Like, we're going here all the time. Like, it's becoming a conversation. But I didn't really tell them about the problems that I was having with it personally.
Right.
Because they're like, oh, well, you know, you guys, that's what you do. It shouldn't be that big of a problem for us because we do it. Well, do it all the time, right? It's not an issue. You do it every day. But it was an issue. That was probably, I think, other than, so the shrine conversation, probably in that first 6 months, that was kind of weird and difficult. I was kind of putting myself out there a little bit whenever we talked about it there. Yes. Like, I hadn't really mentioned to them that it was really bugging me that much. And that was about it. That was really the only conversation that I'd had with them. But then within that next 6 months after that was whenever it really kind of just started to, like, it was tapering off at right. that point.
Initially, you said that you'd like to be the guy that was, like, first in the worst oh, yeah. kind of thing. Mm-hmm. After this, did that shift at
Not
all?
Not really.
So it didn't no. have any kind of impact? You're still ready to go?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's hard now because I'm in a supervisory position. You have lieutenant. I never really thought about at some point I would have to, like, tell people to do other things or oh. like, direct people into doing other things. And then I wouldn't get to do it myself.
Right.
That's just a whole other struggle.
Right.
Is you're going to do the fun part of the job, and I have to do the report. And, you know, that part kind of, that sucks. But yeah, that's, I never had an issue after that with doing the part of it. Because I think that there's, I don't know how you guys feel. I don't know how closely you are tied to public safety. Like, you know, like I said, like, I'm a nerd. Like, everything about me is, like, I love the fire service. It's my hobby on top of my occupation. And it's like every interest that I have can somehow probably relate closely to being in the fire service. So, to me, it's a very special, like, an almost sacred thing.
Yes. I think I speak for Oz when I say that, it weaves in and out of our life pretty easily. I mean, we hang out with yeah. our crew almost mm-hmm. all the yep. time. And then even like when we're playing Dungeons and Dragons and there's like a big bad boss is killed, somebody will make a joke about checking a pulse, you know, kind yeah. of thing. Like that's yeah. just like yeah. something that we naturally do just because we are like a nerd version of that. But like you can't go around collecting like IV catheters and ET tubes from back yeah. in the day because yeah. people don't like that.
Whenever you get to a point where you can buy an old ambulance or something right, like that, that's about where it's at. I know guys that have, I actually had somebody that works with you guys actually said something like he thought it would be cool to buy an old ambulance.
Right.
Like, oh, yeah. yeah. It's like, I don't think that's not cool. Like,
right.
If you're into it, yeah, yeah. go for it. You know, preserve that history as much as you can.
But ours is pretty much, I think, amongst our peers is primarily how ours operates. And joking and things like that.
So. Oh, yeah.
Josh, you ever heard of second victims?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this is a scenario where this is like a good illustration for second victims. Josh has someone that he knows on the scene of an accident, and he finds a way to connect himself to that scene, call, individual in some shape, way, or form. And they've discovered that what it does is it leads to PTSD almost more long term because when we relate to calls or scenarios personally, it finds a way of like attaching ourselves to it more and making it much more personal, which then kind of gets carried with us. So it's like a perfect illustration of that, of how that can work. Any residual stuff now that you find that you encounter from this event?
Yeah. I don't have to drive through there very often anymore, but it's still, I can't drive through there and not be like, that's it.
Right.
That's where it's at. You know, I heard a guy talk, he had a very similar incident. He's a firefighter out mm-hmm. of somewhere, California. And I think he'd been retired by the time that he'd actually like really put this information out there. Like he'd retired a chief someplace. There was a stretch of highway that he had to drive to and from work. And same thing. Bad car accident.
Right.
Knew somebody involved in the car accident. There's no escape from this car mm-hmm. accident. And he's like, now it's like, I drive through there retired with my family. And it's like, I can still point you exactly where that car accident
right.
is at. It's the same thing.
Like you know? Experience all the same emotions
yeah,
again?
Yeah. It's, but it's way shorter. Like I think about it. I'm driving down the highway. And it's like, oh, here it is. And then, okay, we're past it. It's gone. And then I might think about it for a while that day.
Right. And just kind of creeps up.
Yeah, and then it goes away. But then, you know, like I'm sure you guys see, you have people outside of public safety like, oh, what's the worst? Yeah. What's the worst thing you've ever seen? It's like, well, like actually, you know, I see a lot of bad things,
right.
You know, but worst is disgusting or what has bothered me the most.
Right. It's over the top for me. Like, depending on what kind of mood you've caught me in that day, yeah. Depends on probably what I will respond with kind mm-hmm. of thing, because I'll either be agitated by the question, because I think a lot of people in the public don't realize the potential tragedy that just opens up inside of us, mm-hmm. you know, with the pain or the suffering or anything like that, of how that could affect some of us overall.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a level of not wanting to have that outward appearance of having something that bothers you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, like that, like I don't want to feel like I'm vulnerable.
Right.
About any of it, you know, but at the same time, it's like, I don't mind anymore to talk about it. I'll be able to leave today, go home. I'm going to go about my day pretty normal, mm-hmm. like after this, but it's been a long time, you know, within a year or two of the date of that accident, I couldn't talk about it.
Really. Yeah.
I didn't want to talk about it. It wasn't until, you know, I had listened to this guy, he talks about his experience, and it's like, man, this guy's like putting this out there for the whole world right. to listen to it. And I think that talking about it in the long term has made it easier, because I'm realizing now, like, how many more people that probably affected that never said anything.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think that talking about it has kind of helped me out. The that first taper after that around that 1 year point, whenever it started to like really taper off, and it really wasn't that much of a thought anymore. That was nice. You know, it's like, oh well, like this isn't an issue anymore. You know, I'm still teaching,
mm-hmm.
like I'm teaching people, and we get people like, oh, well, like tell, like, well, what about this,
mm-hmm.
that, talk about stuff, and then start talking about telling war stories. You know, we're terrible about war stories,
yeah.
Especially the older you get, you know, the more you have.
Right.
So I started to try to talk about it as a way to maybe help people, like, number one, understand, like, what you're going to be exposed to. And then it's okay to not be okay.
Yes.
Which nobody ever told me that. Like, you know, like you hear it, you know, you see like the stuff. I don't know. You guys have like conferences and stuff. I don't know what they have for like EMS conferences. Like, they're talking about it now. Like, it's okay to not be okay.
Nice. That's good.
It's okay to talk about what bothers you. But there's still people that are like, nah.
Where do you think the culture lies more?
You know? I honestly couldn't tell you, because I look at a lot of the information that's out there. I look at what people are talking about, and it's a big conversation. So I think in some places the culture is way better. In my own circle, maybe not so much.
Okay.
I try not to be so turned off from everybody that they couldn't come and talk to me. Mm-hmm. And we have this thing in the firehouse. It's a saying, it's like, leave your feelings at the door. And I think that where it started from was like, we're going to tell you when you're not right, when you need to straighten yourself out,
yes.
when you're not doing your job right, stuff like that. Be prepared to have somebody like tell you
yes.
something. But I think that it has turned into like, don't bring in your shit from outside.
Yes. It's like, and distorted.
Yeah. And I think that that's kind of what it's turned into. Like, we have guys, it's like, you know, like when you show up at work and your partner's obviously not in a good mood, like you can tell.
Right.
Like, that's going to affect that person. It's going to affect the decisions that they make. It's going to affect how they treat people, the people that you're dealing with and your coworkers and everything like that. And it's like, we have this kind of thing where like, we just ignore it.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh, well, leave your shit someplace else. Leave your shit in your car. Don't bring it in the firehouse.
Right.
Which isn't good. I don't think it's a good thing.
It's a hefty expectation, I feel like.
Yeah. You know, like we always tell guys, like, I need you to be 100% when you're here. But what's the reality that they're 100% on any day? Like, I don't know what's going on in one of the guys in my crew's life whenever mm-hmm. I don't see him for 4 days in a row, and they show up to work and he's kind of grouchy. It's like, well, did he just not sleep good last night? Does he have problems going on at home? Or, you know, just as an example. But the culture is just kind of like, leave that over there. We're going to focus on work right now.
We got ahead of ourselves a little bit, which is totally okay.
Okay.
I would like to know what you think that department could have done to better equip you and help you.
I think that the old mentality of that department, the chief there had been the fire chief since like the 1980s, I guess. He's an old guy, which wasn't a bad thing for the department overall, because he was always pretty progressive.
Right.
Even as an old guy, which you usually lose that.
Right.
At some point, there's like this disconnect from whenever you stop riding on a fire truck, then you stop losing, kind of like, you no longer have your finger on the pulse of what's going on with the fire service. And he wasn't really that guy. Like, he was pretty open to a lot of the stuff going on in the fire service, and he was good for us, but there was just never a atmosphere of, like, let's talk about it.
Okay.
And I think that if there would have been a little bit of that, I think it would have helped.
Okay.
There wasn't a lot of conversation between shifts. We'd see the guys that we were relieving in the morning, and we'd hang out with them. So that was something that I thought we did pretty well, is it was not uncommon that you'd come in a shift in the morning, and you'd sit at the kitchen table and drink coffee with the off-going guys for half an hour.
Right.
Outside of that, there wasn't a big conversation. So I think that an atmosphere where it's like, hey, it's the three of us, we're hanging out, right, we're here. What's going on? What's going on in your life?
So you think you're at a point now where you can confront that? Is that what you're saying?
I think so, yeah.
You know, congratulations. I feel like that's a big accomplishment.
I think that it's not easy, right? You know, and depending on where that person's at is going to really affect. Like, people just don't want to talk about
right.
stuff, you know, like a whole like, oh, just be a man and deal with it.
Right.
You know, like, it's not healthy for us to have that kind of approach. But I think that whenever you open it up to the people that you're close to at work and everything, you're like, hey, I know something's up. Like, what's going on?
Right.
You know?
So what I'm hearing is like someone reaching out to you, maybe some kind of debriefing.
Yeah, we didn't do. So I had done critical incident stress debriefings were a thing. I had taken part in one whenever I was a dispatcher. I had a deputy sheriff that was shot and killed whenever I was working at 911. I took part in one during that, but it was just like that wasn't a thing that we were really open to doing.
So it was like closed off from the presenter or from the people receiving it, or both?
I don't think it was even a thought.
Yeah.
I don't think that anyone in the administration really took a look at what we were doing and what we were dealing with and ever gave it any thought to like, hey, maybe we should provide some mental health for these guys. Like some sort of a mechanism, put some sort of a mechanism in place to help them cope with what we're going to and dealing with.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't think that was a thought at all.
What is something that you think they could have provided? Do you think relief time, like if maybe you'd have got like an hour off to like take time out? Because it's like a lot of what happens is you, I know you said you guys were like a little slower over there, but if you're in a busier area and you get kicked out and you run something like that, we got to run the next call with a smile on our face.
On to the next thing. Yeah.
So do you think like a lot of time off would be beneficial, or?
I think that's a tricky thing to say from one place. I think that they could have incorporated something to be like, you know, even just having somebody to talk to. Like, we're very fortunate where I'm at now. We have a chaplain.
Oh, yeah.
That he isn't there to push anything on anybody. He's there to be a support to the people within the organization. Like, if you want to have a conversation about God and Jesus and everything like that, what's the church doing these days? Like, he'll have that with you, but he will also completely leave that out and be like, hey man, if you're struggling, let's talk. Let's talk about stuff. And I actually had a phone call after a call that I had here. We had a drowning in one of the lakes, and I recovered that body. So I had self-initiated to that, my dive stuff, which was an agreement that I had with the prior administration of the fire department. They paid for myself and somebody else to take the public safety diver class. And the agreement that I had is that if they need a diver, like, I'll come and I'll dive. So then we have this drowning. We get this kid's body out of this lake, pack up stuff, talk to the guys that are on shift for a minute. Like, hey, you guys okay? You guys good? All right, cool. Like, I'm going to pack my stuff up. I'm going to go home. Within like 5 minutes of leaving there, I had seen the chaplain. Like, he was there.
Yeah. Because
he's also the chaplain for the police department.
Yes.
So
yes.
I talked to him for a second, and then like I pack up and take off. And he called me within like 5 minutes. Hey, man, are you okay? Do you want to talk about it? That was good. And I wasn't bothered by it. You know, I've done really well since that car accident.
Okay.
I've done pretty well at just like separating the two. But it was nice to just have that.
Well, I also think that the difference between your chaplain and, like you were talking about your spiritual life suffering earlier, is that sometimes I like, the only way I can say it, sometimes church staff to me feels sheltered.
Yes.
I operate in a dark, real world. It's not because I think it's like I'm in this stuff more than you, but I feel like the world that I'm exposed to is very different kind of thing. And if you have that chaplain there who rides with you occasionally,
they get it.
Yes.
They get it.
Absolutely.
And I think that that's where the, and not to, to say anything bad about like my church that I was going to at the time, they didn't know.
Right.
Like they didn't understand. If I were to talk to somebody there, they wouldn't have got it.
Right. Oh, you could end up blindsiding them because they think they're ready to hear your story, and then they hear your story, and it actually goes a little worse than you even anticipated. Yeah.
And like I said, like I don't have anything negative to say on that end. But having a chaplain in-house, that has really helped us out a lot. He's an awesome, I can't say enough good about the guy. He'll just let you talk. We have guys at work that will be like, if you're struggling, like if you want somebody to talk with you, then like we can talk. Like I'll listen. And I think that that helps a lot. But at the same time, it's like, is that like sometimes when people off that up are like, is it really the person that you want to talk to? I'm sure that you have people at work that you can open up to a lot more than other people. And sometimes it's like, maybe it's like the person that's willing to do that isn't really the person that you would be the most comfortable to talk
Absolutely. So I work with Oz, obviously. So anytime I know that someone's going on a call, I usually will get a text message, or I can, you can tell over the radio traffic that it's a, like a terrible call.
Yep.
And I know who doesn't like me. Like, that's not a secret. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, part of the job.
Like
That's right. Part of the job is networking to know who is the best resource to reach out to that person that might help them more than me kind of thing. Because just because we don't like each other doesn't mean that, like, I want you to go home and sit with that stuff, you know, kind of thing.
Absolutely. You know, I had a conversation at work with somebody. It's like, I don't want anybody within the organization to fail. I want everybody to do awesome, no matter what our relationship is. I try not to have this just straight shift look at everything like, oh, well, we're A shift. We're the best. You know, you know, like we might say that, but we're saying it because, you know, I think that that's just a healthy thing that we do in the firehouse. So like we're going to amp ourselves up. But like I don't think that because I think A shift's the best, I don't think that C shift or B shift or anybody's terrible. I want everybody to be awesome.
So, Josh, closing thoughts, statements, anything you want everyone that would listen to this to know.
If you're struggling with, like, find somebody to talk to, like, even if they're not within your organization. Like, I have friends that work other places that I kind of vent to, like, they're guys from the outside, but they understand it because they do it. And I think that sometimes that makes it a little bit easier. Try to make connections, as many that you can, with other people from all over the within public safety, not just within your own discipline, because they can help you deal with some of the things that they might deal with all the time.
Right.
You don't do a whole lot, you know.
Like sometimes cops aren't that bad.
Yeah, sometimes. Sometimes they're not that bad. Overall, they're pretty terrible. But no. You know, like I have buddies that are cops that, you know, like I love those guys.
Right.
You know, my wife was a dispatcher for a long time. So we can relate to a lot of things, you know, and I think that's actually helped our relationship.
Right.
A lot is that, you know, there isn't a whole lot of mystery about what I'm doing whenever I'm at work.
Yes.
The downside to that is whenever I come home, sometimes she'd be like, well, did you have a long night? I'd be like, yeah. And she'd be like, well, your truck only ran one call overnight. Yeah. The other truck ran five calls overnight and I was awake the whole night listening to have to go do stuff. You know, stuff like that.
Yeah. Can you stop being a creeper for a second? That's what I'd tell her.
And she is. She is a great A. She should have worked for the FBI. Like she should have been like hunting down serial killers or something like that. But I think that her being in public safety has helped me out a lot. But I see other like public safety relationships that don't mesh. That sometimes those combinations aren't always awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, it works, which has really helped us out a lot. And then talking to people that have also experienced trauma.
Oh, okay.
I think is kind of, for me, that helps. My younger brother was in the Army. He was active duty Army. He was in Afghanistan, and he's been around some pretty gnarly stuff that I can't really understand.
Right. But
we talk about stuff a lot.
Oh, that's, that's great.
So that's, he's really opened up about his experiences. And I think one of the things that we talked about that's easier, that he finds a lot easier is, like, once he wasn't in Afghanistan, he didn't really, like, for him, he said he didn't feel like he had to think about it. Talking about some, like, bad stuff one time. He's just like, I can distance myself from it because I'm not there. I went back to Germany. We left Afghanistan. I came home for a month, and then I went back to Germany for a year, you know. And then I came home. He got out and came home. So that's kind of helped. Having a network, you know, just, I guess, really to sum that up, have a network of people that you can communicate it with. I didn't feel like I had that with...
it sounds like that, yeah.
You know, I didn't deal with it, and it took a long time to get over it. Now, you know, I get off work, I talk to my wife about stuff. You know, like, there's always been to say, like, you don't want to take that stuff home to your family. And I think that if your family isn't in public safety or in healthcare or something where they're exposed to anything like that, I don't think you should. Because does that really do them any good?
Yeah,
no. So, but, you know, like, being able to talk with her about stuff. She has an idea of what I'm doing anyway.
Right.
And she has the same, like, I have kind of a morbid curiosity to begin with. Like, if we go someplace where there's a dead body, I want to see it. Like, I don't know why. I don't know if you guys are the same way. You don't have a choice, really, when you're
right.
But
you don't want to smell it, is what Oz says. Yeah.
The smells. Smells are, so that's, you know, it doesn't get better the longer you go.
No.
I'm way more sensitive to smells now than I was when I started out. But yeah, the smell, I could go without the smells, but, I can't help myself. Like, I want to see, like, I don't know what it is.
I think that's just a human thing.
Yeah.
Like, we want to, you know, curiosity. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So
it's also, I believe, peering into the unknown.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Like, it's like, they're already on the other side and they're here, but they're not.
Mm.
So I think it's some of that too.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah. It's just having people to talk to about it. You know, I had close friends where I worked at, and they weren't the guys that I could talk to.
Yeah.
You know, like, we were buddies, but it was just not a thing. Like, we didn't talk about things bothering us or stuff like that.
Okay. How would you say you establish that kind of relationship if, like, a new guy comes in and you want to let him know, like, this is the culture that we promote?
I try to, you know, like, we have this thing in the firehouse where it's like, leave your crap at the door.
Yeah.
But I tell the guys, like, you're going to see some shit. It's going to happen. It may be a while, but at some point you're going to go someplace and you're going to see something that's terrible. After that, like, we're going to talk about it, and you can open up or you don't have to.
Josh, we just want to thank you for coming out today, making yourself vulnerable and attempting to alter the culture that you can affect by sharing your story. It really means a lot to me and Oz, because we know it's not easy just to come out and put it all out there for anyone to listen to. So we just want you to know that you're appreciated, and hopefully we'll get to sit down again and have another discussion.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening to Life on Duty. If you're interested in sharing a personal story you have and how it affected you, please email us at lifeondutypodcast@gmail.com. If you like the shit we discuss and want to hear more, follow us and give us something better than a 1-star rating.